I'm here to present the positive impact of structural intervention on knowledge of and use of school-based condom availability programs by urban high school students. A mouthful, but basically I'll be explaining how we've created interventions and some of the initial results in condom availability programs. Condom availability program, which I will shorten to CAP from now on just to make it easier, are programs that are part of coordinated school health programs that make condoms available in high schools. Now in 1996, this day is a little bit old, but in 1996 they found that 50 school districts throughout the nation were giving out condoms through these types of programs at about 431 schools. What programs like these do, in addition to giving out condoms, is to provide an opportunity for adults to have direct interaction with students. So this one-on-one time was a really good opportunity for counseling and prevention messages about abstinence, STDs, and condom use, as well as just provision of other information that might be pertinent to an adolescent's sexual health and development. CAPs also vary very a lot on how they are actually implemented. Some schools are able to have a fishbowl on a school nurse's desk, while other schools require active parental consent for a student to receive condoms from these programs. Now, in Los Angeles Unified School District, which is the district we are working in, the CAP was implemented in 1992 as a mandated school board policy. These had to be implemented in each high school, and the schools were given the leeway to set up the committee, which always included the school nurse, and define their own parameters as to how the program would run. The parameters included when the condoms were distributed, whether that was before school, after school, during lunch, how they were distributed, by whom were they distributed, as well as how many were to be given out. So essentially, the district left it up to the schools to decide on how they would run the program. The only main requirement by the district was that information about abstinence, condom use, and STDs had to be included in the distribution of the condoms. LAUSD uses a passive parental consent procedure, so that means that a student was assumed to be able to receive condoms from the schools unless a parent wrote a note back to the school saying they wanted to remove the child from the program. In 2004, Project Connect conducted formative research on the LAUSD CAP program. About 55% of students were unaware that they even could receive condoms from their school. These are based off of youth surveys that we did. Fewer than 1 in 4 sexually experienced students ever received condoms from the CAP. We also did some key informant interviews to talk to staff, nurses, administrators on campus to find out why the CAP was not being utilized as greatly as we hoped it would be. A lot of times it was left to the health clinics on campus, if there even was one. These clinics are run by outside organizations and are not part of the official CAP. There is also confusion and difficulty in the consent process. Some schools thought that consenting was active consent, so the students who were getting condoms were only those whose parents had signed a slip. So that was the complete opposite of how the program was intended to be run. Administrative buy-in was a problem. A lot of administrators just felt like this wasn't a high priority issue, so they left it alone and had not set up the program. There was also a lack of awareness about the program in general. Most administrators and teachers had no idea that this even existed. And there are logistical burdens, such as where do we store condoms safely and in a cool, dry place, and how do we even inform people about this, how do we keep track of who does not have consent, and those type of logistical burdens. So Project Connect came up with these intervention goals for our CAP programs. We wanted to see an enhancement in the implementation of the district-mandated CAP at the high schools we worked with for in our interventions. In doing so, we hope to see an increase in the knowledge of students who, their awareness of the program. We wanted them to know more about the program and to know where to access condoms on campus. We also wanted them to increase the number of condoms that were actually received from the CAP. So we found that when we went into our schools that every school was a little different. Each high school was at a different stage in their development of the CAP. We found that some were in pre-contemplation. They had no idea what a condom program was. They didn't even know if they had one or how to run it. So it was completely like, what? What is this? Okay, this is news to me. We found others that just were already thinking about it, had heard about it, but just hadn't gone around to implementing it. We found also that some were just starting it up, so there was a lot of questions that needed to be answered. Others were maybe already in the process of starting the program in action. Our ultimate goal for each of the schools was to be in maintenance, where there was a continuation of the program as well as an expansion of the program, and expanding in such a way that there were more condom distributors on campus, more condoms being ordered each semester, and just a more higher use of the condom program in general. What we wanted to do was to see where each school was at and find out how we as a project could work to get them into compliance with the district's policy. Some of the activities that we conducted by stage included educational meetings. So in the first stages, in pre-contemplation and contemplation, we really needed to work with them on education of the program in general. We talked to them about the policy and about adolescent reproductive health in general and how this policy would be beneficial to their student body. In the third stage, where they were just starting to prepare, we created a self-assessment where we went through a checklist of compliance items about the program and walk through it with them to find out what they needed, what we could do to help them, what materials we needed to develop with them. As we moved into action, we implemented the plan with them. We worked a lot with them on follow-up. So follow-up was really the key in helping the schools. We were the point of contact for the schools on making sure this all happened. So when deadlines were set, we were at the school or calling the school to find out, do you need help with anything? Have you met the deadline? Can we assist you in any way with developing additional materials? So really just showing up and asking the questions made such an impact with each individual school that it helped move them along the process. And finally, we worked with them on outreach, so developing materials that they could then give out to students or show students so that there was an increase in awareness of the program. This slide is just an example of a couple of the flyers we helped develop with the schools. We acknowledge that they're not the most youth-friendly right now, but we're working on that. So we have some ideas that we'll talk about at the end about how we're going to make this, how we're going to increase the outreach and make it even more viable. We needed to measure our achievements as well. So our youth measures are listed here on this slide. First, our research question. Do the enhancements of the CAP result in increased knowledge of the program and increased use of the program? In order to evaluate the effect of the interventions, we asked this question. So we surveyed high school students, and the two questions that we really looked at to evaluate our CAP was, does someone at your school, such as a school nurse, give out condoms to students who want them? And also, have you ever gotten a condom from one of these people? A sub-measure of this was whether or not a student had gone to the school nurse to ask for condoms. Our analysis used chi-square and logistic regression. In chi-square, we looked at the outcomes by data collection wave and performed analyses based on condition and whether or not a student was sexually experienced or not. Our logistic regression models included condition waves and condition by wave interaction terms. We restricted this to the high schools because condom programs only exist in the high schools at this time. One of the first analyses we ran was the change in knowledge of CAP. So we looked at all the participants in our high schools and found that the increase in knowledge of the CAP across waves was significantly greater for our intervention than our control participants. So what we see here is that yes, there was a change in both intervention and control, but it was significantly greater in our intervention schools. We see that there is a difference in the conditions and that the change in knowledge across the waves in our intervention schools is stronger. This change, when looked at by gender, is driven by the intervention females. So the intervention females have a stronger change in the and their knowledge of CAP across the waves. This graph shows you visually what that difference is. If you look at our purple Bars here, those are intervention schools, and you'll see an increase across time, our three waves, that is consistent, while our control schools in teal is not as consistent, so we see a stronger intervention effect. This exemplifies the how it's driven by the females. The males are not shown here, but if we were to show you males, the males were more static, while the females have a greater increase in our intervention. Now, we then wanted to see, we used the same analysis, but we looked at it just among the sexually experienced students. So what we find here is that the change in knowledge of CAP among the sexually experienced students increases across the waves, but there is no significant impact or difference by condition and wave. So there wasn't really a difference in our intervention and control school participants here, but when you look at just, when you isolate it by gender, and we look at just the females, we find that there is a marginally significant impact in our wave two participants. So in wave two, the females who are sexually experienced have a slightly greater change in knowledge of CAP. Our next question we asked, one of our next analysis was whether or not students actually used the CAP, who knew about the CAP? So this is among all students regardless of their sexual experience. And what we found was that there was no difference between the conditions in the use of CAP among those that knew about it. There was an increase across both waves for this analysis. Now, we might be able to explain this because in by wave three, we were still in our second year of, in the middle of our second year of intervention, and we had just put the structure in place for the condom availability program at our schools. So we still hadn't gotten to the point where we were normalizing the condom program among the students. And we will be addressing that in our next intervention years. So hopefully we'll see a greater increase in the usage of CAP as our waves move forward. We then also asked whether or not the school nurse had any impact, had made a difference. We work very closely with the school nurse, and you'll hear a little bit more about that from Christine DeRosa. Our school nurse is a very important part of our condom program, as that most high schools, the school nurse is the primary provider of condoms to the students. So we wanted to see the effect of the school nurse on this. So among all the participants, regardless of their sexual experience, there was an increase across waves that was significantly greater for intervention than control participants. And this was primarily in wave three. This change was also driven by the males. So if you looked at gender, there was a less of a change among the females. However, when you break it down by those that were sexually experienced, we find that this increase actually is driven by the females. So it brings about this question of what's difference in our interventions with the females. How are we impacting females slightly differently than the males, especially among the sexually experienced females? This graph just exemplifies what I just mentioned. You'll see that in wave two, there is a greater difference in wave two among the conditions of females. Now, in summary, our findings show an increase in the knowledge of CAP is greater among our intervention schools than our control schools, which is what we had hoped for. And going to the school nurse for condoms is significantly greater for our intervention than our control participants as well. What we've done with our enhancements is to do feasible, practical, low-cost things that help the school bring up their program to compliance and to make them stronger in the schools. What we found with our minor enhancements is this increase in knowledge of the CAP, as well as more students going to school nurse in our intervention schools. What this means for interventions is that we really have to look at how every school is different. So we found that enforcement of the condom program varies so greatly among each school. And there's nobody at the district level that is set aside to enforce the CAP policy anywhere with all the schools. I mean, this district is very large, so there are a lot of high schools there. So no one's there to do enforcement. And for us, as a project, instead of enforcing the CAP, what we did was follow up with the CAP. So talking to each school, following up with them about their whether they're following the policy and how we can further enhance it. And finding someone responsible for the program on each campus was also a challenge. We found that a lot of schools didn't feel this was a main priority. So, you know, for instance, one school principal or assistant principal said to me very bluntly that condoms are not our priority, graduating students are our priority. So in essence, he was telling me that health was not something that they felt was as important. But what I ended up having to explain to him was that the health of the student, if they're a healthy student, they're more likely to come to class and be more likely to graduate. So we had to frame it in a way that made sense to them in an educational model. So with all the competing priorities, we really have to work with the school on making the cap work for them. So these minor enhancements that we made by working with the personnel on campus can result in a substantial improvement in the program and how they implement it. One example of that I find really amazing is one of our schools. We walked in there in the beginning of interventions and told them about the cap, and they just said, "What is that?" And they looked at each other. They said, "Do we even have that? What are we talking about here?" And they were completely baffled. They'd never heard about it. No one had ever passed the information down to them. And this school has made such a difference in the year and to year and a half that we've worked with them on this program. They now have a fully functional cap. They have several teachers and nurse, and the nurse and administrators are handing out condoms, and every semester we're seeing an increase in their ability to give out condoms to students. So we've seen such a change in that one school from not having any idea what this is to being a fully functional condom program. So the improved implementation results in a greater student knowledge and the seeking of the condoms from the school nurse. And we hope to continue to see an increase in the usage of the cap as we implement more activities in our schools over the course of our intervention years. So some of the next steps I've already kind of laid out is that we are going to continue working with the schools, keeping them in maintenance and making their program stronger and maybe even larger. We also want to look at how can we enlist student leadership groups and other peer leadership groups in this process. So we're looking to normalize the usage of the condom program, and to do that, we recognize that peers are very important in this process. We also want to increase outreach, so having the peers develop outreach materials with us. And as well as one of our schools, they came up with this idea themselves, and we supported them in this, was that their school nurse went to every homeroom and announced the condom availability program and worked with the school to make sure that this was something that was heard and known about at each class. We also want to maintain the function of the programs as much as we can by following up and being in contact with our schools. And in our evaluation, we will be examining how changes in knowledge and use of the cap impact the participants' usage of condoms. So we have those questions in our survey that's going to measure that. We also want to examine the relationship between the number of condoms that are distributed and the participants' condom use. One of our process measures is to track how many condoms are being ordered from our school, ordered by our schools every semester and year. So we want to see how that is related to our participant condom use. We also have longitudinal data, as Kathleen mentioned, so that data will help us see whether or not participants over long term, over the course of years, has increased their usage of condoms. So that concludes my presentation. I want to thank my co-authors, Dr. Curran, Kathleen, Patty, Chris, and two staff who are not here, Steve Martinez and Kathy Wong. And overall, I want to thank all my staff who are not here. As Kathleen mentioned, we have a huge data collection effort. They're actually doing it right now as we speak. They're in the schools getting surveys right now. And I want to thank all of our staff who work really hard to help us achieve this wonderful goal. So thank you very much.